Okay, so welcome. My name is Michael Leiblein. I am this year's division chair for the Strategic Management Division of the Academy of Management. And I was going to say one of, but the privilege of taking on this role is you get to organize this. Well, I guess I've been telling everybody else you define a plenary as a gathering of the whole. And I don't know if that, we'll put this plenary in quotes. But in this case, we get to have a really interesting discussion today on something that I've been thinking about for a while, and I'm really privileged to have some new ideas from folks I wasn't sure exactly what they were going to say a couple of months ago around this topic of whether we should be revisiting the fundamental issues in strategic management. So our plan is to run this as a roundtable. I'll speak for a few minutes briefly just to try to set up the problem with a range of questions and some data to share with the group. We'll stop very quickly and then have roughly an hour. I know you want to speak to and hear from all of these individuals. So we'll talk to the panelists for about an hour on a range of questions affiliated with this idea of whether we need to be revisiting these fundamental issues, and if so, how. And then we'll close up with some question and answer time for you, some calls to action for the group, as well as and some questions from you to the panelists in particular. So this year, I think we have a fabulous panel, so I'm gonna just briefly offer very quick introductions and ask you to join me in welcoming these folks. Professor David Collis received his PhD in business economics from Harvard University, is currently a professor at Harvard. He's written over 100 articles. I believe is the recipient of one of the 50th anniversary McKinsey Award for best article in the HBR. And for this particular session, one of the things that's interesting is David has an article that had a big influence on me is article with Michael Ruckstedt on how do you think about strategy, and then his more recent work on the complete strategy landscape. Professor Emily Feldman received her DBA from Harvard, is currently the Tarnopol Professor of Management at the Wharton School. She published her first book on divestitures late in 2022. One of the things I've always admired about Emily is her ability to link the past and the foundations of our field to contemporary topics and contemporary research projects build an agenda for future research projects. Professor Gambardella Alfonso received his PhD from Stanford University and is currently a professor at Bocconi. I know you all know this, but he's a SMS fellow, a longtime department editor at Management Science, past co-editor of the SMJ, and incredibly, won an award on yesterday, was awarded, and apparently gave a quite inspiring speech yesterday that I missed. I was somehow cornered with new doctoral students, so it wasn't nearly as inspiring as I think of the conversation you must have had, but is obviously well-positioned to talk about the central contributions of our field. I'll jump Harbir for a second I'll go alphabetically with this, to Professor Silverman. Brian received his PhD from Cal Berkeley, currently the J.R.S. Pritchard and Ann Wilson Chair in Management at the University of Toronto. I'm glad I announced that correctly. I keep thinking of the Ann and Nancy Wilson Chair, but maybe you get that reference. But okay, but Brian's research has been recognized with the Dan and Mary Lou Shindell Prize from the SMJ, the Gould Prize from the American Journal of Sociology, the most impactful paper prize at the Journal of Business Venturing. I think you get a sense of both the expertise and the breadth of fields with which Brian has been able to bring strategic management ideas. And I think he'll bring some fresh insights to this conversation. And Professor Harbir Singh, our final panelist, earned his PhD from the University of Michigan. He's currently the Mac Professor of Management at the University of Pennsylvania. Harbir is also an SMS fellow, previously served as Dean of the SMS Fellows, and I think what's incredibly relevant here is has this role with the Mac Center that maybe helps us think about how we bridge our research with practice. So please join me in welcoming these five individuals who will answer most of our questions today. So my main role is to make a couple of quick observations here before asking them for their insights. And the first observation I'd like to make is just to note that the field of strategic management is an undeniable success story. So I hope when you look at this slide, I could show you graphs of membership increases in BPS STR at Academy, the Strategic Management Society, published papers, citations, they all tell a similar story. There's tremendous growth that the society has enjoyed. I think alongside this growth, many will agree we've accomplished a lot, but we've also specialized our research increasingly, our methodologies increasingly, maybe used more disciplined and scientific theories over time. None of this success was promised early on, but there's been some changes, and part of our call today is to start thinking about whether and how we should be thinking about defining what is unique and valuable about the field in the future. Another slide that I think might be interesting for some is that much of our success is built on our ability, or historically has been built on our ability to offer some new interpretations of the firm. So I hope with this slide you can see some of these classic books that I'm sure many of you have read many of these offerings. But my point is more the text on the left, to just remind everyone that a lot of our success is built on our way of thinking differently than other disciplines, economics, psychology, sociology, other fields of management, OB, HR, innovation, et cetera. Initially we've offered a different way of thinking from, let's say, IO's notion of social welfare, the operations focus in our manufacturing colleagues might, and operations colleagues might bring, our focus on tasks that our OB colleagues might bring. And at least in the 1990s, a lot of that was crystallized, if you will, in either Richard Nelson's famous article, or I'm highlighting here, the Rommel Chendel-Tease Fundamental Issues in Strategic Management book. And what they identified at that time is that the field was somewhat distinct in its ability to address four questions: how firms behave, why is there competitive heterogeneity, what's the value or function of the headquarters unit, and then this notion of international competition. And then they had several other questions, including questions about process and whatnot, that were very highly emphasized in that offering. I think what was interesting is that those canonical issues were argued to be important because they were underemphasized in other disciplines and fields. This was a way for us to be somewhat distinct. Now, I think fairly recently, we've seen some emerging concerns about our future, and I'll just invite you to read some of these quotes very quickly. But I think these quotes are speaking to a schism between our heritage and maybe the potential contribution of our field moving forward. So we see things, are we tackling the big strategy questions? Are we able to connect to our core? Are we able to be distinctive? I think there are some of these concerns. The way I think about them is in this taxonomy of good strategy, good social science, good statistical identification. I don't know if you can see the number one, it's the convergence of all this. That might be a unicorn. I strive for it. I don't think I've ever achieved that. I wonder, however, how we should be thinking about this with this build. I think a significant fraction of the seminal work was in that sort of area too, and we've improved, but there's some trade-offs between the good identification work and good disciplinary work, and I want to invite us to think about that. So ultimately, my question is this: should we revisit the fundamental issues? And I've had the privilege of talking with these folks over the last 3-4 months about this question. I think the potential responses are, should we worry? Should we revisit the fundamental questions, reimpose them, change them? If so, what are the criteria? I don't have the answer, but I think it's important to confront the question. So what the STR division has done in the last several months has had a series of virtual discussions, and I'll just have a very brief plug for that here. But with several of our EC members highlighted in the images, we had brought together prominent scholars. So if you just see the top left version, we brought Peter Capelli, Rebecca Kehoe, and Patrick Wright from HR to speak with Jay Barney and Dan Elfenbein about what's the overlap between strategy and HR. Do we have similar questions, assumptions, insights, and what happens when we bring those two fields together? And we did the same thing for each of these areas. And what we're going to do today is sort of continue that conversation with this illustrious group, talking about where we need to go. So what I'll do is stop talking now and let you hear from them. I will be our moderator for a little bit. And so to kick off our session, what I was hoping to do is just quickly get some of your opinions regarding how you think the field has changed in the last 10 years, where it might be going, you know, your take on important questions and where the field might be evolving over time. So, David, if you could start us off, maybe then Emily, Herbir, or others have expressed ideas on this.
Two categories: one is content, one is process and methodology. And here I'm talking about what I think has happened in the last 10 minutes. I think we've talked more formally about the last 10 minutes. Content side, my sense is, if we go back to the original question about how firms behave, to me that always has had an element of dynamism and change, you know, how firms behave. We know they have routines, that's irrelevant. We want to worry about how they behave differently over time. And I think the field in the last 10 years has shifted and has made a lot of contributions around dynamics. The world is changing faster. We're in this VUCA world. I always talk about the impact of new technologies. I'll just do it with you guys. How many of you have a smartphone? Hands up. How many of you use your smartphone for at least an hour a day? Keep your hand up. 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day, 4 hours a day. Imagine how different your life is because you have a smartphone. That did not exist 17 years ago. Literally did not exist. Just think about the change, you know, COVID being another big work from home. The enormous amount of change out there. So we have to address that. We have to think about how firms behave in that context. And to our credit, yeah, dynamic capabilities, redeployment, reconfiguration renewal. We have a session on Saturday on that. The evolutionary theory of the firm. A lot of competitive interaction, and the treatment of uncertainty, and how that affects decision-making inside firms. So that, to me, is one of the big changes in the past, which is appropriate and good. If I can just briefly shift then to the methodology process side, and here I'm going to be more critical. Part of this, I think, is to be a little bit provocative. And obviously, this comes from me as a Harvard Business School person. But I do think that the field has pushed too far in the, back to Michael's three circles, going towards sort of rigor over relevance, publication over impact, statistical significance over effect size. Part of it is, as the field expands, it gets more specialized. By definition, you sort of start to go down rabbit holes a little bit. But, to my mind, there's been a lot of, and this is not to criticize it, but there's been a lot of, that you read it and you say, does this really make a difference? We're not in the stage of behavioral psychology anymore. But, I don't want to criticize anyone, but things where we have, we're looking at the effect of this contingent on that, interactive with this. You throw in enough variables, you mediate them enough, and of course you're going to get a significant result. And so process-wise, methodology-wise, I think we've gone down a bit of a rabbit hole, again, sacrificing the relevance.
Emily, would you care to add to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's picking up on what David was just talking about. So I agree with you completely, David. And one thing that I see actually is just kind of the proliferation of phenomena that seems to be called strategy now. I'm not trying to criticize either, but I think it's interesting to sort of say, what are the core questions that we started with, and are we really kind of speaking to them? And to your point, David, I think, with identification issues, with the advent of big data, with the advent of machine learning techniques, and more, of course, sophisticated data processing, I do worry a bit that we're going to kind of continue down these rabbit holes in the future and sort of face issues in terms of losing even more sight maybe of some of these core issues that were once so central to our field in these questions.
Okay. Harbir, you had some thoughts on this, I believe.
Last point is that we're just like, if you kind of said what we do, the best guy I've ever been able to do this. A phenomenon I've ignored before. I didn't even like his family. That they were before. So I think that's given the level of challenge.
So fantastic. I mean, I think what I hear everyone drawing connections between classic questions, classic articles, what we thought we knew about, in Harbir's point, Andrews and Selznick, who've talked about purpose and how do we reinvigorate that research and then build on that to the realities of contemporary society. The Tesla example I heard, I was just with some folks talking about AI and, well, there's a real management challenge with AI, like who directs this? You know, what stays inside the firm? Where is the data we're putting into ChatGPT going? And what does it mean when we reveal that information or that asset? So there's some things I think we as a field have historically understood and can maybe apply them, some of these ideas, to some of the more pressing issues of today. So there is this linkage between grand challenges and the core, but make the linkage explicit. So let me move on. So I you will see I'll highlight the main question here. To maybe bring Alfonso and Brian into the conversation a little bit, just asking about their sense as I mean, there's several editors on this panel. I picked these two for their editorial roles. But what are the biggest challenges in the field that you see at the moment? And I guess in the spirit of alphabetical, I'll go with A first.
I'm not there. I'm the biggest challenge that I see in the learning a need for access information of topics and opportunities like this. I think what we are missing is the possibility of creating a unified corpus of, let me put it on my recommendations, on which we all build and we have a conversation about each other. Of course, I'm not concerned about the conditions of topic, which is exactly what we're doing. It's very rich, diverse, enough to say names about language. My concern is more about the fact that we are missing a unified set of lens for this phenomenon. Now, solving this problem is not easy. It's a difficult challenge. But let me suggest ways in which this has been done. One possibility is disciplines become older, and some at some point write a book called Foundations of, in which you write a set of axioms, and you say, this is how we have to build our knowledge. Another option would be that we have none of this kind of foundational papers, which basically says, in this particular area, this is how we have to be involved. In this particular area, this is how we have to be involved. So my sense is that today we are far more fragmented than a set of course, set of areas. Let me give you a couple of key points, which I think could be starting points. So key point number one, I am starting to be about decisions. It's about making decisions in common. And these are a positive flavor. We need to know how the world looks like in order to make these decisions. But it also has a normal flavor. Yes, we are entitled in this field, and it's the beauty of this field compared to other things like economics. We believe that we can inform decision makers and managers about our condition. So we put the positive and normal. So, we have to teach people what is the implication of mergers and acquisitions, but we also have to teach when we think it is a good idea to acquire a company as opposed to not be hiring, as opposed to internal growth. The other point I will make, and then I will stop, is that I think that we are also losing another important point, which was already raised, but I want to emphasize it. We need to address questions that come from. So I experience a drift towards internal interventions. And this is, I think, a problem. We are interpreting the gap in the literature as allowed to satisfy my individual. I think the question is no, I need to see what is happening in terms, see what the comparative questions are, and try to address those questions. I would definitely insist on the start.
Thank you, Alfonso. Brian, you going to opine here a little bit?
Sure. So I would largely agree with Alfonso. I also see two general points. One is, thinking about the challenge, there is this issue of fragmentation. I think it seems to be pretty manageable. More obvious if more resources than Alfonso's right. But strategies can be any dimensions, that's why the space of the fear about resources and critical force. My own sense is one potential anchor of these microfoundations. Another would be fundamental questions where we can order slightly modified foundations. on questions, and then there are rules to enable us to go do our thing and still talk to each other, which is important.
No. I did not. I did look. I did look. That is correct. And it was not as a signal. It was not intended as a signal. It was, I want to hear. I'm older and fatter. But you know.
So I was going to mention those who are interested in how many years ago had a lovely paper about the importance of having a consensus to create distinctive new theories, the personal consensus.
I think what I heard is we all agree big tent, right? Nobody, I don't think there's anybody on this panel who is saying we want to close the gates to the door or come up with that, whatever colorful metaphor you can come up with. It's all big tent, involve people, but we should be identifying, so it's not about closing the community, it's opening the community, helping others connect to the community, and then do so in a way that highlights something that's valuable and distinctive about this thing that we call strategy. And if we can't identify it, shame on us, I think, is the answer. Okay, so maybe this gets us, I'm gonna move us forward a little bit to what I think is probably the heart of today's discussion. And it's, you know, what kinds of questions, you know, how do we advance our field? If there's more junior folks in the audience, you know, how do they, and they're thinking about their dissertation topics, if there's people reorienting or re-emphasizing or triggering their research agenda. What are some of the big topics that you see for our field today? Do you think there's maybe new fundamental questions to explicate our contribution? I mean, I think everybody here had ideas on this, so we might be going for a while. But anybody want to jump in with their thoughts on this question?
Should I go first?
Yeah, we can go right down the list or in reverse order. Please. You got approval from Brian.
Okay. So the two of the questions from Jake and Dan were the first one about firms. The other one is why are firms different? And that's been a key driver of the field, you know, since even my time back in the late 70s, early 80s. So what is now getting all these different? Why are firms different? The way that is interpreted by the field has been around the intra or differential firm performance. Why does one firm outperform another? And the core of that has really been around intra-industry differences in firm performance. The problem with that is it's basically all about value capture. I used to start course, and if you look at most of the syllabi for strength courses, it's about how do we explain differential firm performance. How do we do it? We have industry attractiveness, we have competitive advantage, we have the sustainability of competitive. It's about value capture. And they always used to start industry analysis with all industries create a certain amount of value. The question is who gets it? It's all about value capture dividing up the time. And I don't know what the strength course is like doing in your schools. Harvard's a disaster, and why it's not interested in why, because it's all about value capture. And their interest is in the entrepreneurial, doing things differently. So just one example, if you look at the eight most valuable companies in America from 2001, it was GE, it was Citibank, it was Exxon, it was 19th century traditional companies, you know, the insurance company, AIG, the pharmaceutical company, it was the classic legacy companies. That's 2001. If you look at it today, the top eight, none of them were founded more than 50 years ago. But more importantly, they are in businesses that didn't exist before they started. Literally, they've created a whole new business model, a whole new way of doing things. They didn't win, they didn't get to be successful by gaining an 8% market share point against the existing competitor in a defined industry. They created something brand new. And what that means is that's where all the value comes. That's the attention where the students are. It's all about entrepreneurship, new business models, creating value. And we've ceded that territory to entrepreneurship, to the innovation people, to the marketing people. We have focused on value capture at the expense of looking at value creation. And another way of looking at it, we've looked at relative performance, not absolute performance. And getting back to the question of social purpose is all about creating value. It's not about winning against someone else. At the end of the day, it's about how do we expand the size of it, how do we create value. So the key thing for me is the challenge for us is to think not about value, but value creation. And for us, the strategy field to focus on absolute performance, the how do we create value, what are you, all the entrepreneurial that we've seeded to everyone else.
So I'm hearing heterogeneity around value creation. And Emily, you've had some thoughts about also about going back to foundationalists. How do you react to David's thoughts?
Yes, I will. So I couldn't agree more with David. And you know, I think what's really interesting to me is that we have these foundational questions, right? They've been here, and some of them remain so unanswered, right? So we're kind of talking about all kinds of all the different directions, down the rabbit holes, but you know, we don't know the answer to some of the questions that I've continuously struggled when I talk with practitioners that I often can't answer, like a simple question. I'll give an example of one that I had the other day. So I was talking to a group of CFOs, and they asked a question about the optimal, going back to this point about normative, right, the optimal frequency of portfolio reviews in companies, right? So how frequently should a company review the composition of businesses in their portfolios to create the most value for their companies? I couldn't answer. I just could not give an answer. So, you know, I'm not saying that we need to stop doing all the, you know, bells and whistles, fancy stuff, but I do think that this idea of kind of getting back, like, what is the role of the corporate headquarters? How do we think about composition of corporate portfolio? How do we implement mergers and acquisitions, right? How do we think about synergies in mergers and acquisitions? I'm just picking the areas that I work on, of course, but I just think that there are kind of questions and issues that we need to kind of go back to that we may have lost sight of a little bit of.
And it does seem, I mean, I know saw Alan Webb, who's here earlier from PwC in the room, and Martin Reeves has been around a little bit. I mean, there's a bunch of folks that are coming in saying, hey, we're hungry for discourse with you, but answer some of these questions that, you know, have high practical relevance. Alfonso, yeah, please.
I think one way of thinking about this is,
yeah.
That's a great point. I mean, I don't know. I think I might have shared this with this team. I'm not sure. You know, I was influenced by Hans Rosling's Factfulness book. And one of the projects I've had on my back burner I'm looking for some help with was, Rosling and his team identified 10 or 13, I believe 13 facts in health economy. And then went around and asked people, you know, what are your responses to these questions that they can be documented, like optimal, you know, portfolio review or correlation between optimal portfolio review and something. It's remarkable. I think the line is so they give multiple choice questions, ask the field what do they think, and find that, you know, too many of us are dumber than monkeys was the line in the book. And what that means is we get the multiple choice question wrong more frequently than monkeys who choose randomly. I mean, so can we document 10 or 11 facts around core strategy questions? And I think that would help us in the classroom, that would help us with our relevance, that would, you know, help us, you know, even just have a more interesting career. Let's move on to, you, nobody wants to hear me. Alfonso, you had some thoughts on this?
Let me really start on the presentation. Let me then suggest my last starting for questions is not that different from starting from setting milestones in the way you want to organize things. So if we start from questions, I can see three ways of addressing things. One is distinctive, I'm just documenting the number. A second one is correlation, I'm sure that there are relations among them. And the final one is closing. Now, our discipline has the fortune that we are open to embracing all three with some rules. You don't want to describe a phenomenon that is very well known. But if the phenomenon is very novel, you don't want to engage in causal assessment, which are incredibly hard, and you do not even know what the phenomenon is going on. So if we cross these three bullets with novelty, I see that a more novel phenomenon we should be open to describe, because it's interesting to know what happens. The second step is correlation, and then only in the end, we can actually try to build the theory from what we have seen and what we have. So if we use this lens, we ask a question, and we think, okay, description, correlation, and causal effects. Okay, what contributions can we do in these directions. I think this is a good step forward. And starting from the question gives us the answer. And on this, let me add a couple of things. One is that when you go to the course, don't just think about the course as a theory, don't just think of the course as imaginative problems, causal division. Causal means also that we can develop this theory, both positively and normally. The empirical analysis is just the outcome of the theoretical. So, for example, the question about purpose, which it's a great question, it's not what I am working on, so I can speak openly about it. It's a great outcome. And what do we need? We need description. What are purposes? We need correlations. Which one has which purpose under which conditions? And we need causality, we need a theory. We need to understand why do we want to have different purposes rather than others and so on and so forth under what conditions. I think this is a nice example of how we could proceed in building cumulative knowledge. You know. I think Emily raised exactly the questions that Emily raised. You can read them exactly with this lesson. It's another great example of how we could
thank you. I'm going to go to Brian. Unfortunately, I'm going to go reverse alphabetical order next time. But do you have ideas on this? The same question as well, right? Where you would like to see the field moving?
So basically, I agree with you. There must be, like, you can go to two papers. Where
disruption, you know, Bird makes a sea change in what it's doing, innovation, which could be possible. This is why that those things, the past few years, didn't only increase versus the 1 or 2% you might get by deciding to have this type of product here. And of course, there's plenty of good drawbacks that support. I guess what seems to be thinking about that is that question about how concrete values gets back to decisions and so on. It gets rid of the question about how you learn different kinds of capture. Most part of it is, I don't know this business model, how I want it, and what kind of is replicated. And I don't know really enough about the industry, but I think some of the companies that are thinking about weren't necessarily the removers, they were just somehow coming closer to what was happening before. But it strikes me that's interesting. It connects to questions and maybe suggests ways that they modify. So for fans in the field, I think, years ago, it would be nice to go back and revisit the question. It's just really the morning issue. It doesn't have to change. One other quote I have from a lot of people's book value, but I can imagine you may have seen further learning the value of strategy and entrepreneurship. Especially in strategy, if you look earlier and earlier in this life, or even pre life, to figure out why it does work for us or whatever. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Others that's wonderful. Most of us, part of a particular challenge, I guess, you've got a separate entrepreneurship course in before, right, David?
Yeah.
So many of us have the luxury, we don't have to deal with that, which makes our life a little bit easier than a lot of us. But looking into strategy entrepreneurship, company may be interesting.
So I'm yeah, please, that way.
I don't often I say one of the fundamental questions should be how firms create value creation. That doesn't mean why firms different value capture is wrong. It's absolutely fundamental. The problem, we understand that. We've made huge advances in the value capture, industry structure, competitive advantage, competitive. That's terrific. We have to teach that. Absolutely. It's wonderful the field's done that. I'm saying we need to extend the scope of what we do to think more about value creation than just focusing on value capture. So, I don't mean to downplay anything that the field's done. It's absolutely seminal and critical. This is in addition.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's great about this is I think we are, you know, there's a degree of agreement. I think there's, I was talking with some junior scholars yesterday, and to borrow the blue ocean phrase, they were sort of saying, well, I'm starting my career. There's so much great work on value capture. I see it difficult to make a seminal contribution there. Understood. We all manage our careers. There's a call now to, I think there's two calls from this group that I'm hearing. One is the more focus, well, three. One, you know, a little bit more about the strategy, entrepreneurship, value creation issue, and what do we uniquely say about that? And that might be a productive research area. You know, what are the processes and how do they compare, or what are the capabilities to creating value, and where, you know, how do they compare against each other? You know, I had my little taxonomy, Harbir. I heard a separate taxonomy, and I don't think any of us are wed to any one taxonomy, but let's understand the trade-offs when we move and address or create research through different avenues that are more disciplinary focused or empirically focused or whatnot. And I think, you know, I also hear a lot about contemporary examples. I'll come back. I mean, I saw David's presentation the other day where he showed me the data. I used to do something similar about the persistence of firms in the Dow Jones or whatnot, but I mean, it's a striking example that might be help us refresh all the work on persistent performance differences. So I think what I'm hearing are think through these contemporary issues and how do we wed those to classic ways of thinking about how we design our research, recombine assumptions in ways to create novel questions or novel contributions, and then understand what's somewhat core or central to the strategy field. So I hope you're thinking about this because we're going to ask you questions in 10 minutes. So this is your I call it a warm call, I think. Like, okay, I'm going to come to you in a few minutes. So let's move on. These guys have a little bit more work to do before they're put on the spot. So our fourth question was about getting to these phenomena or getting to these hot topics or grand challenges. You know, I asked the group to think about examples of these particular phenomena or topics that might be, that they think are particularly well suited to thinking through with a strategy lens. So I think the question was, are there examples of phenomena that you believe might be productively analyzed with a strategy lens? So let me, come back to the group. I think, Harbir, I think you had some ideas on this. Maybe I'll go a little bit more general backward, but.
So I thought it might be interesting to incorporate the science of
David, you had also prepared. I mean, I want to involve Brian earlier in this, but I forget how to do that. Do you want to comment on this? Yeah, do you? Okay. Well, that's why I invited you on the panel, because you make things interesting for me. We're good. This is not a fair question, but you answered a non-fair question, so it's fine. But so do you think this appeal to using some of the theories and paradigms that we have confidence in, do you see that, when I hear that statement, I hear we sort of have confidence that these existing theories, there's some coherence to, there's some support for, and is that underlying your notion of at least start with this, approach to organization or resource allocation or whatnot, or is there something else that you have in mind?
Well, that's what I mean.
So then we're looking for anomalies, and then we update, right? Yeah. And David, you had some thoughts on this question as well. Or Emily wants to jump in, so I'm going to let Emily jump in. We'll come down this way, okay. Slowly.
So I'd like to just talk about sort of finding evidence from seed,
think it's especially hard to benefit when we don't have, you know, sort of everyone working with exactly the same model. So how do they figure out
since we're coming in, are we going to break the pattern or no, Alfonso?
No, I think that's establishing that phenomenon is a new phenomenon that we cannot understand that we can be used to have is the first step. There are many features and then figure out actually the general category of the phenomenon is safe. So I think that
And David, I know you. We talked about you having thoughts on this, there, sir, and so on.
Yeah, and again, this goes back to my interpretation, and I've been around enough from the beginning of the but this notion that started with my culture and industry and how I'm value capture. I'm making an appeal for shifting, extending the scope of strategy to value creation. The other thing I think that we need to experiment with is value realization or execution. Again, go back to the origins of the field. People didn't exist. My culture was always concerned people didn't exist. Literally didn't exist. The idea was we can take a purely economic perspective, take individuals out of the whole issue, and then we can get some more issues, some positive conclusions. So the heritage of the field has sort of been to take people and organizations out. In parallel, there's always been the organizational process stuff to about. But my sense of this is that if we're going to understand why firms differ, we have to spend a lot more time on the organizational process side of things. And that's a way through the field to help understand better value realization execution. And it just came up in this session on Saturday. Consider two firms, Coke and Pepsi. You would have thought they're the most similar firms in the world. They've each made a biggest acquisition in their history. Coke bought Costa Coffee, and Pepsi bought SodaStream. Very different decisions about how to expand their scope. Why did that happen? They've got the same resources, you know, they're the same, you know, they're in beverages, soft drinks are declining, they go in completely different directions. Why have they done that? You know, resource-based view of the firm, well, maybe. There are two plausible explanations. One is the CEO of Coke, is James Quincy. He's English. He went to the same high school I did in Birmingham, England. Costa Coffee is an English, very successful coffee chain. You know, so maybe it's just him, you know, yeah, I love Costa Coffee, I'll buy the coffee company. The Pepsi side of things is, Pepsi used to own Pepsi Restaurants, which is now Yum! Brands. They decided to divest it because a million service transactions every day is a very different business than selling a product, you know, cans of Coke and marketing. They decided, you know, 20 years ago, those two businesses don't fit together. So path dependency, they're never going to buy a coffee chain, which is all about, you know, service delivery, a million transactions every day. There's two very powerful, plausible explanations for why these firms differ. They have nothing to do with economics or resources. They're both to do with, you know, people, processes, history, and so on. And so I do think that we need to add back in the, you know, dynamic capabilities, something along those lines. The thinking about that, you know, that's where the resource-based view is the furthest gone. My big shtick about dynamic capabilities is that is there a trade-off with underlying lower levels? So, yeah, continuous renewal is wonderful, but does that actually prevent you from actually being statically efficient in whichever business you happen to go to? That's an organizational question. That's not a resource or anything. So I do think that, again, here I'm basically arguing or articulating my complete strategy landscape. We focus as a field on value capture the minute. Absolutely, understand it, wonderful. We need now to spend more time on value creation, and we need to spend more time on the organizational, the process, the people side of things, before we have a picture of ultimately why firms differ and how firms differ.
Well, there we go. I mean, what I'm hearing from this panel is a lot of, we can think about several contemporary issues. I mean, and use the example of this in sort of acquisition and bring in more about, what does a reconfiguration routine look like? What does a renewal routine look like? How do we involve humans in this? We brought up the AI issue before. Can we use classic theories? Can we use transaction costs to talk about what should be internalized in terms of AI or not when we don't know where the AI data is going? Or can we use other theories of the organization of the firm to think about what is the appropriate way to organize and put people in charge of an AI structure? The example I've been using and heard about is all the ethics surrounding AI, and do I want the IT guy to be, my ethicist as well, and probably not. Something else I've heard here, we've heard talked a little bit about sustainability issues. I guess in this conference I've heard people reference resiliency and other kinds of outcome measures and how we can think about not just risk and return, but other measures that help us think, or multi-attribute measures that help us think about how we should be balancing off the requirements of that the senior manager has or the general manager has in addressing some of these issues, and the economics or the final the finance side. So let me transition a little bit as we start to wrap up a little bit. We've talked a lot about critical challenges we face, questions we might be thinking about, and using various phenomena to think through using a strategy lens. Are there questions or summary comments that the group has for what we should be addressing, or what you would recommend people be addressing in the coming decade? And I guess we had, as I'm looking at this, let me just open this up to the panel. The things moving forward that you think we should be addressing. This was the US, yeah.
I can speak to specific questions. I guess this is what we need to move forward. Just two thoughts. One, so just based on all the papers that I read, what I find I miss most in strategy research because of this, is institutional detail, which I missed from the papers. We want numbers, we want rigor, we want to connect social science, we have to create the more I know about the specific thing you're studying, the better it's not usually. Could you tell me more about these particular settings? What's the folks that do? How are these institutions being made? My sense is a lot of papers, a lot of research, the more that one can tell about that versus in these more relevant connections with the common problem. But it actually helps us connect the better to some theory in regards to social science, because we can see enough nuances to really understand what's going on. And can potentially help on the independent side, because it's very easy to perceive the leader that you're using right now. But the more understanding you have what's really going on, the better we can do it, figuring out the right way to explain what we have in order to speed the most out of the data. So I love to, in general, I think, here in the law and in the world, more folks on institutional detail can be great. Beyond that, I'm just going to say, let's all do good work. That's what we can, is that the field is sort of now. See what others
do. Harbir, any advice? Just quick advice?
Yeah. Yes, you do find things that are not important. That is, that's not. But, a research agenda, balancing
Final thoughts, Emily?
Yeah, so two things, maybe, right? So one, I guess this is the line of a different way of thinking about the institutional stuff. Like, I think that is, and I've realized this more and more, kind of progressed in my own career, it's incredibly important to talk to practitioners and to understand what they are facing and how they are experiencing them. Right, so too often, any of the papers, just reading papers, yes, we have a lot of institutional detail, but it's actually not at all the reality of what's happening in terms of a decision that has to be made or a choice set that would be a case study, exactly. So I think just really understanding kind of how these issues are experienced, how the phenomena of interest are being experienced is sort of one piece that I would emphasize in terms of incorporating into research. The other, and I've been trying to kind of synthesize what I've taken from my colleagues here, I think that the idea of sort of normative and choice are the two words that have really stuck out for me. And so what I wrote down here on my paper is research that provides managers with guidance or answers as to the right or optimal choice in response to some factor, right, some consideration. So that was poorly articulated. But I think you see what I'm getting at here in the sense of, yes, we have all these questions and we can argue and come up with a list of 10 other fundamental questions if we want to, but for me this kind of is what it all boils down to in terms of what strategy research is all about.
Alfonso, thank you.
So, let me say, anything that I can say was said, but not everyone said. I might basically say that you not be able to report what I said so far. So, let me just highlight a few of the things that I very much with Emily in this case, because she I think there are foundational questions, and interestingly, they are not any different from the foundational questions that people might have studied in this scientific. I mean, they articulate one way of thinking of the problem, but this is exactly what the people that actually study this. But it is important that we say today, because what we have seen is really a thing that is moving very much so it's going to be a problem. But I do see that we increasingly get our strategies sociology, organizational behavior, and that. I think we have to go back to papers, which are completely different papers, but do they address questions like the one that Emily has tried to do? And I think this is important because these are the relevant. The second point I'd like to make is really this idea that, I said it yesterday, reality is more imaginative than imagination. So we try to imagine interesting questions, you go talk to practitioners, and I think that Emily is situation in which she says, oh, I cannot answer this question. It's a good thing because this is telling us to have a different leader and work at the office. So, to me, these two elements, we go to some relational questions, we try to see how the practice informs us on what is interesting to work on, and of course, with institutional details and all the rest, is the way. Of course, there are new phenomena. So we should not be, there are phenomena that maybe raise new questions. But here again, I want to echo Brian. Let's first make sure that these are really new phenomena that we need to invest in. So let's start with the presumption that we can embody these phenomena in the old real and the old questions, and if not, new questions must be made. So for example, the point of purpose. Purpose to me is exactly a case which I'm not sure. It could be addressed with the tools that we have, it could be addressed with the tools, and looking forward to research that actually informs me on this. But there are questions, I think, again, the value creation story. I mean, he's a super competent for this, so I can't what he said. So if he
is telling me we need to understand value creation more than value capture. So maybe they definitely need to understand value creation more than value capture. But as you can see, this is a question that is only accepted in the conditions of this system. I think it is not the funding in terms of the I think this would be the way we also create the game.
Fantastic. And David, you want to close us out? Closing thoughts on this?
That involves everyone else now. We're all being taken by phenomena by practice, by institutional detail. And the implication of that is what we should be doing is normative as well. Absolutely. I go back to the four original questions. Two of them always struck me as being sort of, I don't want to say passing, but contemporary. This one around law, corporate quarters, the source of the international competition. You know, those were current, those were important. Not that they're not important, but there are always going to be those. And others have alluded to, we have AI, machine learning, ESG. There's always going to be a churn in terms of interesting new phenomena and topics to study. And those, I think, are, and again, not passing the wrong word, it doesn't mean they're unimportant, but they're going to be, there's going to be churn in them. I go back to the two other ones that they identify. Why are firms different? How the firms became? And again, that's my plot for why are firms different? It's not value capture, it's value creation. And how the firms behave, it's not just economics and resources, it's people, it's organization. Go back to those two questions, and that suggests a broadening of the scope of what strategic management has been doing for the last. Again, it gets back to what a wonderful time for people to be looking in the field when there's all this opportunity to look at new areas, but still with the core understanding of why are firms different and how do firms behave.
Well, thank you. I mean, it is remarkable, the level of agreement. I'm gonna sneak a slide in that these guys haven't seen. It's my closing observation. I'm part here. I can't see well enough to know if Victor Bennett's in the room, but he had promised to sing a little part of Cats in the Cradle if I brought this slide up. So I have on this slide, and just so you guys, you haven't seen it, the first is a J.K. Rowling quote, and the claim is, indifference and neglect often do much more damage than outright dislike. And I say that to get you to think seriously about the strategy adjective. And I'm trying, you know, what's the point of using, you know, I was in a session the other day, and we were talking about strategic objectives. This is an academy event. And I asked the person, what's the difference between an objective and a strategic objective? And I got, ha, 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 there's no, you know, I don't understand the difference. And I think there's a difference. And I want you to think about that, and I hope you do. And the Harry Chapin quote is, I don't know if you know, it was a folk singer in the 1970s, quite famous at the time. He was responsible for helping quite a bit develop a hunger initiative, a food bank in New York State. And at the time, he was speaking with then U.S. President Jimmy Carter and really harping on the need to nationalize this effort to have national food banks. And there's a documentary that I saw recently, and Carter comes back to Chapin. He's like, I agree with you. I've agreed to support your effort. Why are you keep coming back to me and harping on this issue? And his Chapin's response was, I don't want your agreement. I want your commitment. And so I think that, you know, this might be a little personal. I don't know if these guys will agree with this, but, you know, I'm looking for your commitment and to think about the strategy adjective seriously. One way to do that is to think about what questions make us distinctive. And I think that's fair, and that's my sort of closing observation to maybe guide questions from you. We'd like to keep 10, 15 minutes to ask questions for the audience, to ask you to take some action. So there's some ideas or prompts here. But is there any questions from the audience? And we can take some of those two microphones and our past division chair extraordinaire and incoming division chair extraordinaire in the front row and can help guide people. But there's some microphones here if you'd like. And I see one question right away.
Thank you for the very insightful discussions. I gather some 40 years ago, if you are trained as a strategic management doctoral student, you interviewed for a job at a management department, people will say, so you are in strategy, are you doing bad OB or bad economics? So later on, our definition, our signature definition is we study performance difference. Under that basic rubric, we are always seeking for a unified paradigm from the product market view to the resource-based view to dynamic capability, business model, ecosystem, whatever, future AI. The tent, as Michael is mentioning, is still open. But I see a lot of mini tents. Last time I count, SMGA has 38 associate editors. All right, that's pretty many big, smaller tents. With the adding of the European forces and Asian forces mingling with the American perspective, or in addition to that, I guess we have more fragmentation. I don't have a scientific example, but based on my brief reading of the program this year, we see many sessions, Europeans presenting to Europeans, Asians presenting to Asians. Maybe that's programmatic convenience. Maybe that's the natural convergence of the interests. So how do we really seek unification? Well, unification may be not an ideal, as just as we discuss scale and scope of the firm, maybe the outcome of pursuing other goals instead of the goals themselves. But still, the scale and scope of our field is something to conjecture. So we have two former co-editors of SMJ. Do we need more tents, or do we not have enough, or do we have too many?
That's directed to you.
This is a very good question. So let me tell you this. I think you are right. This has the potential. So the international expansion has the potential of creating more heterogeneity. And it has the risk of creating more mini tents. But let's put the problem in perspective. There are two paths. Path number one is, are the strategy problems common across heterogeneous contexts? Some of them are. Because, for example, the question of company purpose, I think is the same everywhere. Other questions like value creation is a question that is common everywhere. So the question I don't think is that this heterogeneity has the potential of creating more fragmentation. I think that if we do not address the problems in the way this panel has tried to suggest, which is to focus on some key questions that are common across heterogeneous fields, you are completely right in that this could actually even disrupt more the homogeneity that we are looking for. So it's even more important to understand what are the key questions that we look for, because we think that these different contexts can speak to these different questions. And in 30 more seconds, I want to add more things. At the same time, the international heterogeneity is a source of richness. Mm-hmm. We increasingly see papers from China studying the role of the state into companies and understanding these kind of problems. This is a problem that is common to many, many countries, maybe different from the United States, but actually brings an important new strategy questions in many, many different contexts. So I think you are raising an issue. There is the potential of additional disruption, but I think the culprit is not the potential for heterogeneity, which is a source of richness. It's us. We have to kind of assemble on some homogeneous questions.
Really quick, ditto, right? The one thing I'll add is, as you were talking, I was wondering about the compared to what, in the sense that now here at the Academy and at some other large conferences, we may get folks from all over the world, more than we did in the past. If in the past there was sort of a North America specific conference and a Europe specific conference and an Asia specific conference, that's even more of a two or three solitudes than having us together, but maybe not quite fully mixed yet. So I guess in the optimistic way, I would say I'm hopeful that there's the risk of disruption, but this may actually be a step towards ultimately getting us more connected. Maybe 5 years from now, the sessions won't be quite as isolated as you're suggesting.
Just a quick point. I'm not one of the editors, of course, pointed to. But I think one of the issues that Alfonso brought up is important, which is around questions that are unique to particular geographic domains that have global relevance. One is the role of state. The other one is frugal innovation, which is very much coming from emerging economies. It's not, and it has a lot of relevance to developed economies. So there's some, the big tent here is actually very valuable.
Thank you. Great panel, by the way. If I was gonna summarize in my own words what I thought many of you were saying is that maybe there's a need for more qualitative-based research versus quantitative. And so I'd be curious, just because a lot of the strategy has been so dynamic and has changed so much, going back and reviewing that stuff, and maybe qualitative methods is a better way. If you agree with that, then do you think that the journals in our area are emphasizing that those type of methods, and do you think we as academics are doing a good job preparing our PhD students and preparing them with qualitative methods versus qualitative or, in their studies to support that?
Well, I'll go first, grabbing the mic fastest. I want to see the field have a balance of method. You were using the term balance, and I will call on that. So I think a healthy balance of qualitative, quantitative, and other ways of approaching challenges make a lot of sense to me. Whether there's too little or too much of one at the moment, I don't have a strong point of view on that. I do agree that for some of these things, maybe documenting early on, which is kind of what I think I'm hearing a question behind the question or mishearing it, qualitative may be particularly good for surfacing certain things. But I'd love to see a mix, a healthy balance of methods across pretty much all of these things. As far as the training, so I guess at the level of the field, I'm a big believer in division of labor. And so the idea that some institutions may do a better job of training folks in qualitative just by virtue of who's on the faculty, and other schools may do a better job in other fields. I don't see that as a downside that there are differences, because folks can sort as they see fit. At Rotman, I think we've got Sarah Kaplan, we've got people like that who I think do a great job of training folks in qualitative. I don't think every school has to do it, as long as the field overall has a good mix and balance.
Can I say something on this? Super quick. I think that rather than distinction between qualitative and quantitative, I like better the distinction I was making earlier, description, correlation, causal. Because description can be, if you want, more verbal, qualitative, and so on and so forth. And as you move on, there's more quantitative element, but it's not necessarily the case. You can have very strong causal arguments made without Greek letters, using only Latin letters. So I think the distinction we have to have in mind is really description, correlation, causal. And of course, you can do it verbally or not verbally. My advisor, Nate Rosenberg, was an economic historian. So he wrote incredibly profound theoretical papers, and he had no clue about what numbers were or Greek letters were. But it's still very, very profound, and vice versa. So I think that distinction is more useful for us to think about how to tackle these problems.
Yeah, I think I keep hearing big tent, but let's understand what's distinctive about what we do. I think there was another question I saw. I can't see it. I see two more, and then that's probably, we might have one more after that. But I'm looking at the clock and how much time we have left, so please.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your reflections. I have a question to Harbir Singh. You mentioned that open innovation had to be more systemized, and you have always also been talking about dynamic capabilities in the panel. And David Teese published a paper, Hand in Glove, in 2020, where he said that these two frameworks fit together, like hand in glove. It would be interesting to have your comments on this.
Are you directing it to? Okay. Yes, I think that's a very, very good question. And what you're saying is that some of the, the earlier work that David Teese did on commercializing innovation through partnerships is clearly relevant on open innovation. There needs to be more empirical work in that area because companies adopted open innovation with varying degrees of success. And I think that's a good, and there's been plenty of time that's gone by. So it's a, what I was, in more detail, what I was suggesting was that that's a good empirical opportunity that might actually lend some insight into the extended enterprise, you know, thinking about the firm as creating value through partnerships and then looking at the value capture as a secondary question.
Thank you. This question is, I guess, first directed at David. David, you brought up value creation as an interesting phenomenon for us to explain. And when I think about strategic management, I think it is essentially identified as the field that explains firm-level performance. And firm-level performance is almost always captured in terms of financial, you know, or market-based metrics. But we have this sort of Brandenburger Stewart thing that says, you know, willingness to pay is the most value we can create. We have consumer surplus and we have supplier surplus. That is part of the value created by a firm, arguably, but we don't really talk about those things very much and we certainly don't measure them very much. I'm just thinking, if we talk more about value creation in this domain, what are your thoughts about how it's going to push things like those measurement problems? And I'm thinking about something Michael used to say about good, you know, good fences make good neighbors. And this blending into some of these other fields that are so much more focused on consumer surplus and supplier surplus.
So two things, and I'm not quite sure whether they answer what you're asking, but the one is the sort of the, to me, is the broader sense of purpose. You come back to Alfonso, and what's the objective function for the firm? You know, very much, you know, value sticks, value is very much all about the financial performance, as you said. And clearly the motivation of people is these days is less that, is more, again, the social purpose. But social purpose is value creation, which comes back to that. The so that's one on the how do you, you know, to be fair, you know, I think the huge success of Blue Ocean was that it was more on value creation than value capture. You know, the, that was the red space versus blue space. So people have been doing value creation. The, you know, it's, entrepreneurship has been doing a lot of it. We have ideas of business models. But the focus, even of, you know, Adam and Gus's stuff, the value, has always been on relative firm performance. I mean, you said it's, that's what we explain, you know, relative firm performance. And it's always been compare this to this, and mine's bigger than yours. And much less on forget that, absolutely, how much we, and that's the, you know, that's my shtick here. Again, we know some things. It's not that we haven't looked at it. I just want people to focus more on it. That's, I don't know if I answered your question, I'm afraid.
One of the things I've heard from you, what I think I heard today that I learned was the linkage between the focus on value creation, which I got from your article, as compare and linking that to the why do firms differ. And I don't know that I understand well why firms choose different entrepreneurial approaches. So just my two cents on that. And I said no more questions, but again, past division chair extraordinaire is pointing to someone with a question that I can't see you, but please ask your question.
Sorry. So Michael, what you said, the charge to us, right, is not just agreeing, but committing to this. And so I was hoping we could actually, you could actually explain what are some of those micro foundations or questions that you think we should be addressing. And this gets to a lot of the questions and comments about submitting papers, you know, for review. If it, you know, it implies sort of an abductive approach. Let's use the existing theories that we have out there, but there's obviously some things that can be explained and some things that can't. Yet you don't see a lot of papers that explicitly say, I'm taking this abductive approach, you know, and there's not a lot of templates to follow. So it's very hard to get a lot of these maybe papers that take this approach differently, because you have to figure out who are you talking to? What are the audiences you are talking to when you're submitting this paper? So I guess, what are these foundational questions that maybe will reach the intended audience and talk across all of these multiple tents, if that makes sense?
More specific foundational, so I think I'm interpreting this as, if we said, should we be rethinking the foundational questions from, and we picked a book. And I think the question, Heather's not listening, but I need you to tell me, I can't see that far, I mean, I'm not blind, I'm useless. But I think what I'm hearing is, we've articulated a desire to have people, I just said, use the strategy adjective more clearly. We've, I think, articulated a big tent where we're more explicit about the trade-offs between disciplines and identification and strategy, or between practice and strategy, and a lot of focus on taking questions from practice. Is your question then on top of that, is there a specific question or two that the panel has in mind?
Yeah, what topics, you know, can we talk, value creation, I mean, is that just as broad or as simple as we can be when we're addressing some phenomenon and describing some phenomenon? Is it truly value creation and strategy making? You know, I mean, in cutting across a lot of different fragments of the strategy field.
So, no, I understand. I think that what you are asking, okay, so what do we do in practice, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's not only a very fair question, but it's a very important question. Let me tell you how I would do it, okay? For example, in the area of innovation, but it could be the same thing in M&A, in many other areas, capital structure of the firm, competitive strategy, corporate strategy. Suppose in innovation, I would start by looking at the literature on innovation in strategy. I would also look at trade press, The Economist, Business Week, Wall Street Journal, blah, blah, all these kind of things, and see whether you can use your lens to see what are the interesting open issues. And then what I would do is I would start to talk to some of these companies with the knowledge from the literature and the facts that you have created. This is a blue ocean situation, okay? I'm starting from I want to work on innovation in strategy, and I would gradually form an opinion of what are the gaps in the practice and in the literature that you could then address. But I would use the lens of strategy. I am looking for interesting topics on which companies can make decisions. This is the way I would look at. Because of course, in innovation, you can think about marketing, okay? How do I market the innovation? Okay, fair enough, but this is a marketing story. In strategy, the question is more what decisions I have to make in order to enhance innovation, to make innovation a certain way, in other ways, and bring this to the gap on what are companies interested. You should get at what Emily found out when she was talking to the companies, and get those kind of things. This is, I think, the way I would approach this in practice.
Yeah, can I just endorse that? Back to the criticism of the strategy course, we sort of teach strategy as, you know, alignment of activities and competitive advantage and so on. And at one level, that resonates. But you get traction with the students around, and the discussion around decisions. So maybe the way to think of it is, you know, as Alfonso was alluding to, Emily alluded to, what are key decisions that firms have to make? You know, yeah, I'll go to Emily's one around portfolio. How often do we reconfigure or re-examine the portfolio? You know, take a narrow question like that, that is a decision that firms have to make, and try and make progress on that topic. And that helps understand the broader question of why do firms differ or how firms behave. But I would come back to what are key decisions firms make? You take that as the unit of analysis, the phenomenon to study, and use that as the sort of micro, as the way into these questions.
I think we're out of time, and I appreciate these guys for helping me think about specific questions, whether it's portfolio review. I'm thinking, you know, countries where there's short-term quarterly earnings reports versus longer-term, and, you know, things we don't maybe haven't tested what the optimal response to some of those things are, the role of AI, et cetera. So please join me in thanking these folks for their time.
I don't think it's quite appropriate to do this, but I am going to show you this. One of the things we've been trying to do with the division, this is the whole leadership team, is have more of a red thread through some of our sessions and interact with people. So this QR code will take you to a survey. I don't know that we'll post it because there's a smaller group here, but we'll get some feedback about some of the questions posed to the panelists and how you think about them. And you know, we can at least report back to something to the division about that. So thank you for your time today. I hope to see you at the business meeting, and we'll talk about other similar related issues at that time, 6 o'clock tonight.
Really enjoyed.